Hello everyone, this is Nina and you are listening to episode number 14 of the Audible Weed Walk. I had promised you last week that this week we will focus on one particular plant. Let's delve right into it. At the end, I will include a recipe or two you can try out of the plant du jour if the time permits. A bit of trivia about 14. 14 is quite an insignificant number in terms of weeds or wild greens that grows around. In the rest of India, where southwestern monsoon is prevalent, what happens is during the rain, there's a lot of rain through the rainy season. And during this period, there's a lot of green growths, but they are not necessarily eaten at that time because they may also include contaminants and all the water kind of gets together. It's not quite healthy to go out in the rain to pick them. And so at the end of the season, which is sometime now, as far as the southwestern monsoon is concerned, the kind of eating the wild green starts with a bang by eating 14 different kinds of weed together. And it's called Chuddo Shag in Bengali, that one day, a day demarcated where the 14 greens are eaten and the season starts. But we are not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about one particular weed, which is in the coloring book. It's called Eclipta prostrata. But actually, this has a long list of botanical names, synonyms rather, the names that it was previously called by. So, as more research has been done on this particular plant, maybe it will get some more names. Who knows? But the traditional names have not changed. In Sanskrit, it's called Vringaraja, a name that is familiar to many for its association of good hair growth. In Tamil, it's called Karisalang Kannai Kire. English, it's called False Daisy. Well, if you get to know more about this plant, you will wonder why false? Why not call it Fascinating Daisy, shall we? Common names can easily be changed and assigned, so let's bestow the name Fascinating Daisy. Why have I picked this plant for a podcast today? Well, while the plant grows round the year in moist places with poor drainage, the kind of, you know, tiny little or large swampy areas, it grows best during and soon after the rains. Also, like most wild plants that we call weeds, it is packed with wellness and properties that we really need during this season. And they are mostly consumed at this season because of its deworming property. In this season, in this area, well, sounds like it is entrenched in our tradition and culture, isn't it? Sure it is. Let's start there, our tradition. In Ayurveda, there is a set of three texts called Laghu Trayi or Lesser Triad. These texts include Madhava Nidanam. There are three texts, which one is Madhava Nidanam, one is Sharanga Dharna, and the third one is Bhava Prakash Samhita. So this Madhava Nidanam, this text is mainly focused on Nidana Panchaka, which is the fivefold assessment of disease and clinical diagnosis of various ailments. Then comes the Sharanga Dhara Samhita, which is primarily focuses on pharmacology and pharmaceutics in Ayurveda. The third one, the one which is of interest to us today, is Bhava Prakash Samhita. This focuses on the study of the herbs and their clinical utility. Here, let me mention that Dasha Pushpam, The 10 flowers of medicinal and cultural significance from Kerala also includes this plant, Eclipta prostrata, or our fascinating daisy. So this Bhavaprakash Samhita, which was written most likely by Bhava Mishra around the 16th century CE. CE is a common error as per the Georgian calendar, which we used to previously call AD. So you can also call it 16th century AD. So, well, it is not like yesterday, but you know, the date kind of popped out to me. Consider with this, compare to Shushruta Samhita. You know, in Ayurveda, there are two major Samhitas. The ancient one is this Shushruta Samhita, and that other is Charaka Samhita. They are much older, I thought. A little trivia here on the side. Did you know that the English word surgery owes its name to this Shushruta, who was the original surgeon who wrote this Samhita about surgery? According to the experts, Shushruta Samhita was written anywhere between the 1st century BCE, which is the before Common Era, and 6th century CE. So, even if we take that it was, you know, written at the later date, 6th century was Shushruta Samhita, and our Bhavaprakasha Samhita was in the 16th century, 10 centuries later. Why we are talking about this Bhavaprakasha Samhita? It is in this particular Samhita that we find the mention of Bhringaraja or Eclipta prostrata or our false or fascinating daisy, whatever we choose to call. But here I step back. It's very interesting because maybe you won't find it interesting, but I do really. And let me tell you why. See, Shushruta Samhita and Charaka Samhita, they actually covered it all. They kind of, it was all-encompassing knowledge. But Bhavaprakasha Samhita still came up and wrote a Samhita, which is basically a textbook or what you say, a compilation of knowledge, 10 centuries later about the study of the herbs. So when somebody calls that, you know, once we survey something and we say, oh, we know it all, and therefore in the next 15 years, we don't have to survey again. There is a flaw to it. Surveys always needs to be periodic. Assessments, especially of the nature, needs to be periodic because every now and then there are the new plants cropping up or the new distribution of the old plants. Some plant maybe 15 years back was most prevalent. Now they are rare. Something else has taken its place. These are very interesting topics in studying of the nature and in our exploration of weeds in foraging. So now let's go back to the Eclipta prostrata. So this Bhavaprakasha Samhita that was written somewhere between the cusp between the ancient and the modern times, we can conclude, mentioned this Bhringaraja. Well, yes, if you have been listening to my podcasts and following me in the YouTube and the social media, you know the answer why I am highlighting this. Bhringaraja, with all its traditional uses, actually originated in the Central and South America. That's why earlier text did not mention this. It is actually also native to Mexico, a large part of South and Eastern United States and California, and also considered native to a part of Canada. Within India, it is actually found all over, up to, 1800 meters or even above in the Himalayan areas to where we are, at the sea level in the peninsular India. For this flexibility, it is available in almost all continents, but it holds an important position in both Indian and Chinese medicines. The plant shows amazing variability on how it looks also. Even in this area around us, you can find the leaves to be slender and lighter green in one place and much darker green and white lived in other places. The flower, though, looks pretty much the same in both. It looks like a tiny little daisy, and hence that the name, where the name comes from. It belongs to the sunflower family, and hence this sunflower family are often, you know, that Asteraceae family. That's why the name came from. And Eclipta, however, means that is absence of bristles or fruits. Bhringaraja literally means that it bestows hair the splendid black color like the grandiose humming bee. Very poetic. But as you know, in Indian culture, black hair is celebrated. And Bhringaraja is one that gives really dark black hair like that of the bee. So even though the Sanskrit name may refer to it, its application for the hair, the text, Bhava Prakasha Samhita, which I only read translated version, the translated into English, refers to a range of benefits from deworming to liver health to excellent for skin and hair. Even the Samhita mentions other applications like for mental disorder, anemia, headache, cough, insomnia, dysentery, fevers, gum health, rejuvenating to the extent that it kind of, diminishes the signs of old age. Amazing, isn't it? If we really read out all the applications of Bhringaraja, it will probably take another half an hour just to read them out. So I will let you do some your own research. But just if you're somebody like me, just take it out. It's really ample, packed with good, and eating it once in a while is a good thing to do. Hence, despite being a weed, this plant has received substantial limelight, especially of late, you know, post-pandemic, during this, lockdown. The people are looking into going back into the tradition, traditional medicines. There's a lot of interest in Bhringaraja, not just for its medicinal values, for its application also in the cosmetic industry. So now, in Andhra, Telangana, and also in parts of Tamil Nadu, it is cultivated. That's quite a status for a weed, right? With an average yield of about 6,000 dry plants per year, the gross return is about 100, little over a lakh per hectare. So the cost, whereas the cost for growing the same is about 12,000. So it's quite a bit of profit, I must say, just for a weed to be growing around. Once again, such information, why am I even, delivering this to you? Because it kind of makes us think about our agriculture. What would make a permaculturist take action to grow the kind of plants that they can grow without too much of going against the nature of the land? Since this plant, this particular wild green, actually grows around here, I would think that it will not be too difficult to cultivate it here. And it looks like it's only gaining ground, both in terms of its medicinal use, its cosmetic use, but also it can be eaten. So there is win-win-win in this. So here, I probably spend some time in giving you a few recipes. So if you want to use it as a hair oil, the easiest thing to do is to take the weed and dry it. It dries very easily, probably because it grows in the swamp. Once, kind of watery, high water area, once you take it out of that and put it in the sun, it dries really quickly. So once it's dry, put it in a really good amount of coconut oil, keep it steeped, and like you pickle, put it in the sun And in about 24 to 48 hours, it's ready to use. And you have a fantastic oil. If you want to go a little more deeper into making this oil, you will crush the fresh leaves, a few traditional onion, you know, the tiny little pearl onion, the red ones that you put in the sambar and siam, those ones. So a few of those, a few tulsi leaves, you will grind them together and put them in the along with the coconut oil. Heat it very mildly, put it in a jar, and again put it in the sun. You can sieve them out and eventually have a very clear green oil, some of the best oil that you can, hair oil that you can get. You can make it at in your home. But here I'm talking about edible weeds. So let's give you some recipes for eating it. So take 2 cups of leaves and young shoots. And then comes the recipe. Put 2 cups of water. Boil it down to 1 cup. You can pressure cook if you want. Take 4 cloves of garlic. 1 cup of cilantro chopped. 1 to 2 small local onion, which I just mentioned before. Or if you really don't have it, put 1/2 to 1 small onion. Ginger, about 1 inch. And green chilies, optional. Salt, a bit of salt to test. So these ingredients from 4 cloves of garlic onwards, which I mentioned, blend them together. So once the leaves are boiled, add a little bit of water and all are part of the blended paste. You will put as much as you need, because some people like it thick soup, some people like it, you know, more watery. Adjust the water and amount of blended material that you want to put. Adjust the soil. You can put a little bit of fresh ground pepper on top and a squeeze of lemon. Drink the soup hot. And it is a mildly bitter, but it's still absolutely wonderful. I am not a fan of bitter, but I really also enjoyed it. I had it with my homemade steamed bao, but you can also have it with dinner rolls or whatever you want. Now, do I have the time for one more? Let's go ahead with it. Another traditional recipe, this one which I just gave you, is a soup. It's kind of semi-traditional. The traditional one is called thogyal. It's kind of the recipe of this region. For that, you take the fresh leaves and you saute in sesame oil with 1 green chili. Once that is done, you take a marble-sized tiny little lump of tamarind, some water, a little bit of salt, and make it into a paste. You take 3 to 4 fresh garlic cloves, a few peppercorn, and break it down coarsely with a pestle maybe. And then add it to this paste. And maybe you can blend it just a little to so that, you know, they mix together well. Adjust the salt and it is ready. You eat it with hot rice with a dollop of ghee on top. It tastes very, very good. With that thought, stay well, stay safe, and I see you next week.
This is Oroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.